Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Kamen Rider Chronicles. I'm your host, Joe, and for this episode, we are going to be continuing our coverage of Kamen Rider Ichigo with our next two episodes, episodes 5 and 6. And we get our first two-parter. At least, I think it's a two-parter. At least, we get our first continuation. Let's put it that way. I mean, I know most of this, I mean, as of right now, the whole show is a continuation. Because at least at the end of every episode, it says to be continued. But this is a specific one where it's the same bad guy in at least two episodes. So that is interesting, to say at least. When it got to the end of the episode, I'm like, oh man, that is, I was not expecting it to end that quick, end like that, and end that quickly. Like, the episode went by, it seemed actually kind of quick. But let's go ahead and get into it. So the first episode, episode 5, is called The Monster Mantis Man. And this episode, it talks about basically a bunch of earthquakes that are occurring around Japan. And Takeshi is called up by an old friend to go kind of help her out. And in the process, obviously, Shocker is involved, and he stumbles upon a whole plot there. That's the basic gist of it. And you can obviously figure out, like, anytime there's something going on, Takeshi and Tachibana quickly just jump to the Shocker, you know, train of thought. And I mean, they're not wrong in that thinking, but just, it's just kind of funny how they jump to that quickly. But that is the point of the show, if we're being honest. So let's go ahead and get into it. Episode 5 starts out. We meet this. This is an old friend of Takeshi's when they were younger. Her name is Chikako, I think is how you say it. She is a seismologist working at the Earthquake Research Society. And she's just there. She's doing her job. She gets a phone call. And the phone call is just asking if they had gotten a bunch of new equipment. And she answers honestly. She's like, yeah, no, we just got this equipment in recently. And it's the most state-of-the-art equipment at the time. And then the person on the other line, at the line, hangs up, and then the power goes out. And so Chikako, I think it's how you say it, Chikako, she kind of freaks out a little bit, grabs a flashlight. She hears a noise, and she's hoping that it's the security guard, and then we get a very Alfred Hitchcock shadow come out over by the door, which it is a security guard. But the security guard, like, he walks up to the door. Chikako opens it up, and then the security guard falls in. And this death, the deaths in this episode were interesting. So, like, I know with the man-eating scorpion, when they died, the body decomposed super quick into, like, a pool of blood and then, like, evaporated away. This one, the bodies evaporate into, like, string and then get pulled out, pulled away. It's really weird, really interesting. I'm not entirely sure what it meant, but that's what happened. So yeah, this the security guard falls over. He turns into this string thing, and then his body string thing gets pulled away. And Chikako is shocked and surprised and scared. And then all of a sudden, she sees another shadow. She hears a noise and other noise, and I'm unlike last time when I did some sound effects for what the monsters or the shocker goons were doing. I'm not going to do it this time around, but the Mantis Man comes in and he's making a sound, but he comes in and he kidnaps Chikako. Later on, next day, we come to Takeshi and Tachibana, and they are Takeshi's practicing on his motorbike, and Tachibana is there, you know, monitoring him, taking measurements and time trials, all that stuff. But then, as Takeshi's going around in laps, an earthquake happens, and he ends up spinning out, and he gets thrown off his bike because the bike gets caught up in a part of the earth, a part of the ground that gets split open just a little bit. Tachibana runs over, make sure he's okay. There is a moment where Takeshi has to kind of school Tachibana on how earthquakes work. And then we jump from there to Tachibana talking to Hiromi and Ruruko, which I apologize for the last two episodes because I said her name wrong. Ruruko and not Rukio. So Ruruko. Ruriko? Regardless, I said it wrong last time. And Ruriko. There we go. Ruriko. Anyway, and the other guy that works there, and I cannot remember his name right now. I'm not going to say he's not important, but he doesn't say too much in this episode at the moment. Just basically he kind of makes fun of Tachibana for trying to pass off his earthquake knowledge as his own when Takeshi kind of calls him out on what he was doing. So that just kind of plays out. Takeshi walks in and, like I said, calls him out and just kind of has a laugh of it. And everybody has a laugh of it. It's just kind of a fun little thing. But Takeshi sits down and then he talks to Tachibana comes up and says, "Hey, didn't you have a childhood friend that became a seismologist around here?" And Takeshi's like, "Well, yeah, Chikako. There we go. Yeah, I haven't thought about her in a long time. Like, why you ask?" And he's like, "Well, it turns out she's missing," and pulls out a paper and gives it to Takeshi. And he looks over it and he's like, "Oh, this is not good." So the next scene we have is Takeshi in his lab, and it's him and I cannot remember his lab partner's name, for the life of me, but he is looking at a cell that Takeshi had found that he explains what it is. He explains that it's off of a giant insect. The thing is, though, is that there's not a scene here of Takeshi going to Chikako's lab investigating it, which I think is kind of, I'm not going to say a missed opportunity, but like, I don't know if they just cut that scene out for time purposes, but it confused me the first time I watched it, and I don't know, I felt like they dropped the ball there. So regardless, you know, Takeshi went and investigated the lab, found the clue about the cell. And he also apparently finds a map about all the earthquakes. And again, this is stuff that he finds at this lab, but Chikako's lab, but like, he just pops up with it. Like, how did he find it all? But okay, whatever. But then, on top of all that, he's talking with his lab partner, and his lab partner's like, "Well, so what do all these numbers on this map mean?" And he states that they're the number of earthquakes that have been happening, and each one has been bigger than the last, and the numbers represent how powerful they have been, and the more powerful they have been, they're building up. And then the next scene is him in his apartment taking a radioactive meter. And I can't, for life, I can't remember what they're called. Geiger counter? There we go. And reading the map. Mind you, taking a Geiger counter and reading the map. And he's like, oh, the readings are off the charts for nuclear power, nuclear detonations underground. Like, on a map, my dude? What are you doing? Come on, guys. Really? Okay. Well, I guess I'll go along with this. Makes no sense, but okay. But he basically determines that they're firing nuclear bombs underground. Shocker is trying to destroy Tokyo with earthquakes. Sure, why not? But then Takeshi gets a phone call, and it happens to be Chikako, and she is very distressed. She says that she has figured out where the base is for the people who are trying to make a artificial earthquake that will destroy Tokyo, and that Takeshi needs to come and help her out, but he needs to come alone. And I'm like, okay, like, why? First off, he should have questioned her saying to come alone. Like, she asked for him to come help. Okay, that makes sense. But when she says you need to come alone, that should have been a flag. Mind you, Takeshi is, I'm not going to say he's arrogant, but he is an advanced human being now, being a cyborg, being Kamen Rider. So he definitely has that, not, I don't want to say holier than thou thought process, but he definitely has a, I can do a lot more than others feeling. And he can. He has proven himself so far in 4 episodes. Regardless, he does go up to the meetup. He goes to where Chikako has told him to meet up. And when he gets out there, he finds her. And she tells him, all right, it's over here. This is where they're going. This is where they're at. And they end up finding, she points out this hole in the ground. And she tells him, this is the hole. Like, this hole is where their base is at. And as Takeshi's looking down in it, Chikako looks around and then shoves him inside the hole. He goes falling down. And then all of a sudden she starts calling to him. And then the Mantis Man shows up and grabs her and pulls her back. Now, to Takeshi, and this is the thinking I could put across. To Takeshi, it could look like that the Mantis Man popped up, pushed him in, and then grabbed Chikako. If he didn't know any better. If, as an outside viewer, you could tell, you know, she's the one that did it. You watched her do it. You watched her push him in. But, so obviously something's going on with her. And we'll see that here in just a little bit. But, yeah, no, it's Takeshi is in a really tough spot right now. And it gets made even worse when the Mantis Man, gloating, puts a bomb, a little bit of a time bomb, hanging down off the top of the hole to a point where Takeshi can't reach. Like, the hole itself is, let's see here, doing quick math for meters. See, 3 meters, 6 foot, probably 20 meters, is that? Because he can jump 15 meters. Yeah, so about 20 meters deep. So, like, he is the bomb is literally just out of reach. The top of the hole is just out of reach. And because he doesn't, because he can't jump out or jump across, the pinwheel on his belt is not getting air access, so it can't, he can't transform into Kamen Rider. So he's stuck in the hole. The bomb's about ready to go off, and he is, it's only got 2 minutes, and actually, it, you know, it's starting to tick off. And Mantis Man is just, he's gloating, and he runs off. And actually, I think just at the, like, 5 second mark, the chains on the bomb break, and the bomb goes falling in. And as soon as the bomb blows up, the explosion from it, the wind from it, the pressure from it actually hits the belt, hits Takeshi's belt, and transforms him into Kamen Rider. I will say that is a good flaw. The fact that he can't just change on the dime. Like, he can't just, like, he needs to have the wind go through him. That's what powers his belt, his cells. And I mean, it's nothing bad. Like, I know when you have a character, when you have a hero, you want them to be heroic, obviously, but you can't have them be overpowered. They need flaws. They need to have weaknesses. And these two episodes definitely, I'll say, they definitely exploit those weaknesses. This is being one of them. This exploits the fact that he is, if he doesn't have the wind, the air going to the belt, he can't transform. So, like, whenever he's on his bike and he transforms, well, that's perfect. He's riding on his bike. The wind's flowing, so it's going into his belt constantly. Here, he's in a hole. He can't jump. So there's no wind to get to him. The fact that the bomb blew up, the explosion going out, that's what caused the pinwheel to spin. That's what gave him his power. That's what saved his life. So as soon as the bomb exploded, pinwheel start, he transformed. He was then able to jump out with the help of the explosion. And he stops the Mantis Man from dragging off Chikako. And, of course, the Mantis Man brings in his goons. There is a bit of a battle. At one point, the Mantis Man is trying to jump away, but Takeshi, Kamen Rider, jumps at the same time and grabs Chikako mid jump, and then, you know, does a little bit more fighting, and then is able to get away with Chikako. Eventually, he takes her back to his apartment and kind of is trying to keep her safe. We head back to Snack's Amigo, where Ruruko is there with Hiromi and the other guy who I can't remember his name, the other employee, and he comes running in because he saw a giant bug and he got really freaked out. Ruruko goes looking, can't seem to find it. So instead, she, knowing full well what this means, she hurries over to Takeshi's place to make sure he's all right, make sure whatever he's up to is copacetic. And finds him, you know, protecting Chikako. There's a little bit of talk there, a little bit of him remembering their youth together. And while these two are talking, Chikako starts to mother. There we go. That's the word I'm looking for. Mother in her. I'm not gonna say sleep, but like she's starting to like come to, and she starts to mother about a major earthquake, about 4 in the afternoon, and then about the mantis egg. And then she wakes up completely. She asks where she's at, and, you know, she's told that she's at Takeshi's apartment. And then Takeshi asks about more about, you know, the earthquake and the time, and she's like, I don't know what to talk about. I don't know nothing. And she basically just starts denying everything. And this is the second episode where it's, they have a specific time that they need to do something. And I'm just like, okay. I mean, I get it. I get why they're doing it. It's for drama reasons. But like, you don't have to. You could just do the thing you want to do. But I also know why they're doing it, because, like I said, drama. So while they're there, while literally just after she had woken up, Takeshi was about ready to do something. But then they hear a noise in his apartment, and they turn around, and there is a Mantis Man in the other room, and we get a fight between the two of these guys, between Mantis Man and Takeshi. While this is going on, he tells Ruruko to run, to get out of there. She ends up getting thrown against the wall and gets knocked out. He kicks Mantis Man away and is able to throw a watch onto Chikako before it's like the fighting between the two of these guys gets really like heavy. And then before you know it though, Chikako takes a lamp and knocks out Takeshi, because she is actually being manipulated. She's being mind controlled. And then Mantis Man grabs her. They go running away. He takes her to the base that they, his base. And it does seem like each of these Shocker generals, commanders, I guess, have their own themed base. Because I get, you know, in the next one, we'll have another themed base. But I just think it's kind of interesting that all of these Shockers are very, very, like, well-connected company. They've got bases everywhere. Just saying. So Takeshi wakes up, and then he starts pursuing Chikako, because apparently that watch he put on her was a tracking device. And so, which is, I'll give him props for that, specifically knowing full well that just in case she does get taken away, he was able to slap that on her wrist. But we also find out that Chikako, all the plans that she had made for this earthquake, she was able to complete. That's why it had to be at 4 o'clock. It's still interesting. I guess now you could tell that the plans, everything wasn't fully done, and that's why they needed her back. But now that they got her back, here we are. And with her job done, the leader tells her to just, all right, well, go to sleep until I need you again. And that's what you're going to do. So she does, because she's being mind controlled. And then while that's going on, though, Takeshi is still following. He gets stopped by Mantis Man in the middle of the road. And, you know, fight happens. He transforms into Kamen Rider and, you know, fights some more. They end up getting into... This is... I laughed at this one, because they get into the base, and Mantis Man goes into the elevator, and apparently the elevator can only open the door up if you are part of Shocker, because the doors will open for Mantis Man, but as soon as Kamen Rider comes in, they're closed. He can't access them. But the stairwell, just to the left, is completely open. and he just jumps down there and comes right to the main base. Like, it's, I got a nice little chuckle out of that, because he comes hopping up behind the Mantis Man, and more fighting again. More of the goons come in, and it's, again, more fighting. At one point, he has one of the goons in, like, a headlock, and he's asking what, like, where is the detonator at? And the goon tells him, it's in the egg over there. And before he can reveal any more information, he gets shot with a couple of, darts. But it is... he gets killed. He dies. And again, we get the string thing, which is still weird, but still happens. But, and then we get a scene where he's, where Takeshi is literally every minute keeps looking at the clock, and it just ticks close to the 4 o'clock. And at 4 o'clock, the Mantis Man runs over, breaks this giant mantis egg that's sitting over there, and then goes to grab the lever that it reveals that is going to set off the giant earthquake. But before he can actually pull the lever, Takeshi, Kamen Rider, gives a Rider kick and kills the Mantis Man. And he falls into a pile of string and goes wisping away, and then all of the goons fall over because I guess they're not hypnotized anymore, or the control over them is done, and so they're done, and they all fly away, rope away, I guess. So now the threat to Tokyo is done. The leader is not, like, his light goes off, because that's all, I don't know if I explained that before, but that's all there is. Like, the leader is just a voice at the moment. I'm sure we'll meet him at some point, but right now it's a, like, an eagle and then a light and a voice. That's all it is. Every single time you hear him, it's a voice and the light flashing on a wall of a sculpture of an eagle. I think it's an eagle, but that's it. It's all it is. But that light goes out, so the leader is no longer has access to this base, I guess. I don't know. But Kamen Rider goes over, finds his, grabs his friend, Chikako, and is able to get her out of the base. I will say, I do feel bad for her, because she got dragged left and right by literally, well, Kamen Rider earlier, Mantis Man multiple different times, Kamen Rider now. Like, she's just getting dragged along left and right. It's kind of fun. I mean, not really, but basically he's doesn't want her to see her friend as he is now as a cyborg. It's kind of sad and depressing. And in a way, like, I mean, unless she knew it was you behind the mask, she won't know, but I mean, okay, whatever, dude. But that's kind of how we end the episode, him just kind of saving her and then riding off to his next adventure. Which, that next adventure is... I know the episode, when I watched it, I think it said the Death Chameleon. The Wikipedia calls it the Shinigami Chameleon. So I'll probably say Shinigami Chameleon, if that... because that's just how the Wikipedia plot synopsis has it. So just follow along with me for that one. So this episode starts out, episode 6. We are at the Sanada Art Gallery, and we see Sanada Tetsuo? We'll just call him Sanada. He is a former major in the Japanese Navy, and apparently he has some knowledge about something. While we're panning into the building, we see a shadow moving along the ground, and we hear a like a little bit of a laughter, and that laughter also seems to be in here as well, because Sonata hears it, and he gets a little scared, because obviously it's at night, because why would anything creepy happen during the day? So he's looking around his office, and he doesn't see anything, but he's hearing the laughter. And he starts hearing some voice in somebody asking him, like, talking about who he is and how he was the part of the Japanese Navy, and how he is the only one who knows where the secret hidden Nazi treasure is. And then he looks over to the wall, and there's a swastika painted on this wall. And he's starting to freak out. And he's looking around, can't find anything. And all of a sudden, these hands start coming, like, appearing out of nowhere. And then the chameleon walks up and, well, appears out of nowhere, like, coming out. And grabs Sonata, and it starts basically threatening him. It's like, you were the last known member, this last member of this Navy who knows where this Nazi treasure is. You need to tell me where it's at. And Sonata is swearing up and down that he has no idea what he's talking about, where it's at. He denies it all. And the chameleon starts talking about how, you know, I don't believe you, basically, and maybe if we go to your daughter and start making her a part of Shocker, or basically, he basically just threatens his daughter. And then he knocks out Sonata, and he's going to basically drag him off to his house, to his apartment, to threaten him in front of his daughter. Now, before we get there, though, what I want to talk about here is, I talked about how the practical effects last episode that I of this covering the Ichigo episodes, how the practical effects are just awesome in this because they're practical. This is no different. With the Shinigami chameleon, the death chameleon, when they show him popping in and popping out, like appearing and disappearing, they do a really good job about it. This part in particular, the way that they have him come into the scene, it's very 70s. And like what I'm thinking of is the Star Wars Holiday Special, when Lumpy is watching the little circus performance and everybody's coming in through the door, and how it's basically like, you know, it's green screened off, and that's where when they come in is off of the green screen, and it just like fades in. It's similar to that, but it looks really good. It's really like the effects here look really good. It's just his arms appear like they just appear, like he's phasing these in, and it's his arms are coming out of nowhere to grab Sonata, and it looks good. I thought that they did a really good job with this. And then when he grabs Sonata to go drag him out into the street, like he himself disappears and he is walking Sonata out. So like Sonata, it looks like he's drunk walking around, although his arm is around a nothing, but his arm's just like out, you know, carrying thin air. Sonata's is. But then this is the interesting thing. So he gets out there, and as he's walking down there, what we see is Sonata knocked out. The chameleon walking him. He is camouflaged. He's can't see him. We get Hiromi. We get Ruruko. There we go. And then the other guy from Snacks Amigo walking. I don't know what they're doing at night. They're walking here. And for whatever reason, they are here and they see Sonata and they're like, oh, he looks like he's drunk. And Ruruko is like, hey, why don't you help him out? And the guy's like, I don't want to do that. That's just weird. So Hiromi and Ruruko are going to go do that. But when they walk up there, they both get like pushed back and they're like, what the hell? And they look down the ground and then they see two shadows. So the fact that you can still see the chameleon shadow is odd, but you know, it's whatever. It is what it is. I can overlook that because I actually did like this episode. So they freak out. They go running away. They end up running into the into the shop, into the Snacks Amigo, and they see Takeshi and Tachibana, and they tell both of them what happened, and Takeshi goes rushing out there to see, and apparently, because he is a cyborg and he's superhuman, he sees that. He can actually hear that Takeshi, or that he could hear somebody being dragged along. That's what he says. I guess when they remodeled Takeshi, they literally remodeled everything of him, which is funny because they remodeled his whole body except for the brain. They left the brain for last, but they let him wake up before they remodeled the brain. Figured they should probably remodel the brain first. Maybe after they lost Takeshi, Shocker realized, all right, let's do the brain first, and then we'll remodel everybody else. Yeah, who knows? So we end up getting to Sonata's daughter, Yumi, and she is in she's in a hospital bed. Apparently she just had a surgery on her back, and she's making a gift for her dad. And while she's there, her dad walks into the room, but again, he is knocked out, and so he's looking weird, and she is kind of scared, and then the chameleon appears in there, along with a bunch of his goons, which, again, scares Yumi even more. And then, which is also kind of interesting, the chameleon hits Sonata to wake him up, I guess hitting him knocks him out and hitting him wakes him up again. I don't know. Whatever. But wakes him up. And then it's so that he can see all of the goons torturing his daughter. And they're basically beating up on her to get him to reveal where the secret Nazi secret hidden whatever thing is. He's still denying it. He doesn't want to give it away. But after his daughter is pleading for a little bit, he finally says, you know, stop it. I'll tell you. And then he looks over to this model of a submarine. And the chameleon sees it. And he tells his guys to go and grabs it. And one of the guys reaches over there to grab it. But then Takeshi comes in through the window, grabs it out of his hand, punches the goon, and basically tells the Shocker, the chameleon, is like, yeah, you guys aren't going to get this. And then he starts beating up a couple guys. And then what's really interesting here, though, is he protects Yumi. You know, he hands Yumi the submarine model, beats up a couple of these goons. The power goes out, all the lights turn out and then come back on, and all of the chameleon's gone with Sonata, all the goons are gone, but Takeshi and Yumi and the submarine is still there. And in my thinking, it's like, all right, so you guys were able to basically leave. Why didn't you grab the model when you were leaving? I mean, you could have easily done that. But, okay, whatever, sure. But regardless, Takeshi goes over. He tells Yumi, hey, I'm sorry about your father. I'm going to go find him, protect him. Yumi is very appreciative of Takeshi coming in and saving her. So she lets him borrow the sub, and he's thankful. He tells her thank you for it. And then he's off. He gets back to the Snacks Amigo, and he's talking to Tachibana. And he's like, yeah, they wanted this sub for some reason. I don't know why. He starts giving it a little shake and hears something in it. And he opens up a compartment at the very bottom of it. And in it is a map. And the map apparently it's got like an X on it. And it's part of the upper stream of the Tama River. So, naturally, Takeshi goes to follow the map and finds a dam construction site, and they are getting ready to have a blast part of this site open. They reveal a cave, and the workers go in the cave, and in there, what's really interesting here, though, is they go in there, and they think that there's going to be treasure or something in there, but when they go in there, they see a flame like creeping along in the cave, and that's it. Like, that flame, just we get no resolution to that. It just, they get scared because of the flame, but like, I was thinking that something would come about it, because when they come running out and Takeshi is there, and they're like, there's something creepy in there, and he's kind of brushes them off and he goes in there. And then we see the chameleon outside with some binoculars, and he's seeing Takeshi walk out holding this giant metal box with the Nazi symbol on it. But then what the heck was the flame? Like, that literally, the flame had nothing going on. So I feel like that was a lost opportunity there. But either way, he grabs the box, Takeshi does, gets on his bike, starts driving off, but then he quickly gets trapped by the combat men, the goons, the chameleons combat men, with some giant dump trucks, one in front, one in back, and they comes driving in, and they're getting ready to like crush him, but because Takeshi is cool, he is able to like power jump on his bike with his bike, and while he's in the air, he transforms into Kamen Rider, and then does some cool Kamen Rider jumps and kicks a couple, some asses, pops back onto his bike and goes zooming off with the box. He ends up getting to the Juna University, where his lab is at, and he leaves it with his friend, his lab partner friend, and he asks his friend to try and figure it out. His friend does tell him that this box is like, there's no lid to it, so it's like impossible to open. And I will say, though, like, and I get it. It's the 70s. I need to let it be. But he says there's no lid, and I see a seam around it. But I need to stop it. I'm being very critical, and I shouldn't be. But, you tell me there's no lid, but I see the lid, dude. What are you doing? Anyway. But he tells Takeshi and Ryuki that there, I'm sorry, Ruriko, there we go. Is that how you say your name? Ruriko, there we go. That can't open it right now. I'll try to figure something out, but I don't know what's going on. But they leave. These two leave while they let his partner work on this. Before this part, I forgot to mention earlier, at the base, at Chameleon's base, the leader's talking with some scientists, and they're trying to figure out how to stop Kamen Rider, because he has foiled their plans multiple times now, and they need to find a way to stop him. They don't know how. So the leader talks to some of these scientists to try and find a weakness. And this is another thing where I'm thinking, they studied him. They studied a bunch of things, and I'm like, but you guys made him. You guys should know his weakness. Why do you have to study him? And they even explain, oh, well, he gets, once the wind goes into his pinwheel belt, that's how he gets his power. Yeah. You guys made him. What are you doing? You should know this. Like, the minute he turned against you, you should have already been knowing how to stop him. But whatever. I think I'm getting too invested, I guess. I don't know. But basically, ultimately, the scientists deduce that if you trap Takeshi in a meter box, like a meter-sized box, then he won't be able to get out of it. Like, that's how you stop him from changing the Kamen Rider, and that's how you win. So we fast forward to now, and Takeshi and Ruriko are hailing a cab. They're going to go see Yumi at the hospital. And as they're going, the cab driver ends up going the wrong way, and Takeshi tries to stop him, like, hey, what are you doing? But then the cab driver turns into the Chameleon. He blocks off the back, and then he gasses them, knocks them out. And he ends up stopping at some place close to some railroad tracks while his goons pull him out and tie him up, and they put both of these two on the tracks while a train's coming. Well, the problem is, because Takeshi is a cyborg now and he's more than human, just regular gas isn't going to knock him out. He wakes up quicker and he breaks the chains that he's hooked up, like, that are keeping him captive. He grabs Ruriko. There we go. I'll get it right one of these days. Ruriko. And what he does here, because he's where they're at, is too far to run back before the train gets him. And obviously he can't run the other way because they're over a bridge. So he grabs her, he's holding her, and he dangles off of the end. He's a cyborg, so he's able to do that. But he has to basically wait until the train gets past before he can, you know, get... before he can get back to everything. The goons go back to the Chameleons, like, hey, they're taken care of. We got this. And the Chameleon's like, all right, cool. Let's go get the box. So they head over to the university. While they're heading there, though, we get Tachibana and the other guy from Snacks Amigo. I'll learn his name at some point, maybe by next episode. And those two come to go see the other friend. I'll learn his name too, maybe by some point. And he's done for the night. And Tachibana and the other guy, they're going to wait until Takeshi can get there, because the box is obviously important. So Tachibana tells the other guy to give Takeshi a call while he goes and waits with the box. While the other guy is calling, can't get an answer, he feels an arm or a hand on his shoulder, and he's by ready to tell who he thinks is Tachibana. He's like, yeah, Takeshi's not answering. Turns around, it's the chameleon. So he gets knocked out. Tachibana hears the screams, and he's like, oh no, I think he's in trouble. So he grabs the box to try and protect it. In comes the chameleon with a bunch of goons, and they easily knock out Tachibana, grab the box, and they go to leave. As the group files out, Takeshi shows up, grabs the last guy, knocks him out, and then he changes into that outfit to blend in. Just hops back in line. They all file back into the van, vehicle, whatever truck they're in, to go back to the base. And they end up, apparently the base is out by Lake Biwa. I know I said that wrong, so I'm going to apologize. But he's keeping track of where the base is at. And so they get into the base, and they're talking to the great leader. And the chameleon's like, I got the box, leader. We can now take care of whatever the Nazi plan was. And so the leader calls in the professor, and Professor Heinrich. And he's like, yeah, so the only way to open this box is with this electromagnetic wave emitter that I have. And we have to match the pulse that the box is emitting. And once we do that, this will open. And there we go. And as he's getting ready to do that, the great leader stops him. And he's like, hey, so I just got a call. Apparently, not only did you get the box, but we also got something else. Or I should say someone else. Like, you left with 6 people, but only 5 came back. And the chameleon goes over and counts. He's like, 1, 2, 3. No, we got 6 here. And the leader's like, no, you've only got 5. One of these people is hot as Takeshi Hongo. And then Takeshi is like, he realizes the jig is up. So he takes off his costume. And I gotta give this boy props. Because he always wears his suit jacket. Even under the costume. The goon costume. Because as soon as he takes off the goon costume, his suit jacket is back on. It's like, dude knows how to accessorize. Good for him. But no, he starts to attack a couple of the goons, and he's going to go and try and get out of the base. He's going to try and get out of the base, because at this point, the chameleon had already grabbed the box, so he's like trying to go get the box and get out of the base. But as soon as he goes and makes any sort of move, he falls into a hole. Now, as he's falling, he's transforming into Kamen Rider. But that's how we end the episode. So this is our first, like I mentioned in the beginning, it's our first 2-part episode. And it actually has me excited for the next episode. Like, this was a good episode. I really enjoyed this episode. Yeah, there's some problems with it, but that's just me being nitpicky. But no, this was fun. This was good. I really enjoyed this. And I'm really enjoying these episodes in general. They're fun to watch. And like I said, I think the last one, just seeing the original, just how they're doing these practical effects is cool. Seeing the chameleon first pop in and the green screen that they did there was really good, really awesome. I really did enjoy that. But no, so this was fun. Looking forward to the next episode and what's going to happen there. But no, we'll keep chugging along, and we'll just keep going. So thank you all for listening. If you guys want to reach out, you can find us on all social medias at Comic Book Rundown. You can email us at comicbookrundown@gmail.com. You can rate and review us at any podcasting app of choice or on the social medias. If you do, we'll read an upcoming episode. If you would like to come on to this show, on to Kamen Rider Chronicles, please reach out. I would love to have people on here to talk Kamen Rider, because I would love to just get some more insight on this stuff. So other than that, we've got the other shows on the network here. Comic Rundown, last Saturday of the month. Rundown Reviews, every Friday. Getting Franchise, the last Sundays of the month. So that's what we have. Thank you all for listening, and we will catch you next time.